After they finally caught him the second time, the last time, John had a lot of time to think. John cut the throat of his first lawyer when he recommended John throw himself on the mercy of the court. Afghanistan made his reputation, but it was the tip of the iceberg, comparatively speaking, to what could come out if they decided to really investigate. And he knew Earth didn't want another Rodney McKay to create new rumors of Earth instability. Or the fact that the SGC program seemed to be breeding some of the most skilled psychopaths ever released on a general population. But he was John Shepard, and his second lawyer wasn't as stupid, with a force field between them as he explained how John was fucked, reading the list of crimes with awe, Asgard and Tok'ra assassinations for hire, intergalactic terrorism, list growing longer and longer, until John cut him off and asked if he wanted to know everything. Funny thing, the man did. 2 months later, John was standing in front of a wormhole in Colorado, chained to the ground, but alive. The SGC had more to lose than he did when all was said and done, so when the death penalty was stripped from the table in exchange for his silence, it wasn't like he was surprised. He just wonders, even now, if they really believed he wouldn't find a way out. Knowing them, he thinks that they did. Rodney's practically hovering at the gate when John gets back, looking a vague unhappy that changes to startled nausea as the three bodies are brought in. John catches him before he can get too close, putting his body between Rodney and the medics. Trust me, you don't want to see. Rodney frowns. But no. Wrapping a hand around Rodney's wrist, he gently pulls him away, giving Elizabeth and Bates a short look before leading Rodney out the door to the transporter. He can feel her eyes drilling into his back with every step before the door cuts him off. "She'll want a report," Rodney murmurs. John shrugs, resettling the P90 as they step into the transporter. "You said implant?" Rodney's frown flickers, changing into something that John can't quite recognize, but looks strangely like satisfaction. "Finished the implant procedure right after you called." Rodney pauses as they get inside, pressing in the sequence for the medical section. "I thought you might want to watch the first round of tests," he says casually, leaning into the wall, and John fights the urge to touch him, contenting himself with watching Rodney's quick, sharp gestures, the curve of his mouth. "You. 5 minutes, Wraith. What did you find?" "Everyone's dead." Rodney's eyes widen. "Lauren's investigating and getting a count to see if anything was taken." John turns it over in his head. On one hand, that's less SGC personnel to deal with. On the other, how is it that Athos has been occupied for 8 years and we never heard about them? Rodney shrugs. "SGC isn't known for its fair and impartial treatment of alien civilizations that are not less advanced than they are." John thinks of the way Elizabeth had dismissed Taylor's warnings and nods slowly. "Neither are the Asgard or the Nox, which often begs the question of why they allied with us in the first place." Rodney waves it aside, leaning into the wall with a frown. "And hello, since when do you decide where I go? That's fairly sensitive equipment." "On a planet that was just relieved of at least part of its human population," John points out, holding the scowling blue eyes. "No." Rodney's frown deepens. "John, are you actually arguing to go to a planet with proven hostile alien activity? That doesn't even make sense." John tries not to smirk as Rodney's mouth opens, then shuts abruptly. "Right. Rodney." Rodney waves it aside, but John has lived with Rodney for nearly 6 months and knows a hell of a lot better. This isn't even close to being over. "Come on," he says, touching the control panel so the door will open. "So, implant?" John says, almost jogging to catch up. "We have a test subject," Rodney says, leading John into the infirmary, past some random medic currently studying something gelatinous and flesh-colored on an isolation bed. He stops, looking uncertain, and John tries not to smile. "Well, we have him in the room you interrogated Ford in," Rodney continues briskly as he palms open the door. "He should be... yeah." Walking to the wide observation window, John stares down at the man, manacled at one end of the room, two of John's men watching him with bored attention. John freezes, inches from the glass, chest going hard and tight. Sumner. John doesn't remember a lot that happened with Sumner. He knows there were sometimes guns, sometimes knives, something hot that burned through skin to char bone. There was rope, and there was wire, and sometimes there were needles. He knows there was sex. Violent, and strangely simple. And that it got Sumner off to get him off. He knows he was in the infirmary for too long sometimes, because he'd read it on Rodney's face when he got back, terrified and angry, coalescing into something hard and frozen. But he doesn't remember what happened. It could have been the drugs they were giving him, or regeneration amnesia from being too often thrown into that machine to be put back together, or whatever delayed trauma shit that Psycho Heitmeyer always mumbled about before they put her in isolation when she talked one too many prisoners into messy suicides. The truth is, John thinks that maybe he just doesn't want to remember. He'd wake up in a corner of their room and not recognize his body. New tissue and regenerated bones, teeth, cheek, face. Whatever Sumner fucked up, they would fix. And so little of it felt like him. New skin and new blood and new fingers and new toes. A stranger living in his own body. He does remember Rodney. Every morning after he was brought back, warm hands and gentle touches that skimmed new flesh with careful fingers, measuring size and depth and width and everything that had happened when John had been taken away. John learned his body through Rodney's hands, skidding over repaired hips and reconstructed thighs, spots of new growth from gouges that still smelled like disinfectant and smoke, the shattered spine that he remembers only in a pain that went on forever and could have driven him crazy. Had, maybe. Rodney would say, "We'll make him wait for it," into his ear, hand on John's hip to ground him into the room, their room. Slow starvation, we could do that. Vacuum at 5-second intervals. He'd live like that a long time while his organs slowly shut down. He'd rot from the inside out. John would close his eyes and listen to Rodney's voice, soft and gentle, when he told John how they'd watched Sumner die. But first, they were going to enjoy it. "I thought you'd like it," Rodney says softly, and John breathes out as Rodney rests his chin on his shoulder, voice close to his ear. "Carson fixed his knees and got him hydrated, mostly, so he'll last a long time." John feels the remote that Rodney presses into his hand, lighting up at the activation of the ATA gene, warming his skin. No part of his body doesn't feel this, humming along every nerve, bringing him a light. "Ancient," he hears himself say. "How?" "I needed to thread it through the main processors," Rodney whispers. "Soon I'll get it so refined that you won't even need a remote. You can think at them and turn it on." Rodney's hand covers his, guiding his thumb. "This controls sensitivity. This controls sensation. And this?" Blunt fingers trace across the remote, and John has just enough comprehension left to recognize the layout of the LCD screen. "Press that to wake him up. It administers a low-level shock to his cerebral cortex, in case he passes out. John's mouth is completely dry. Licking his lips, he murmurs, "Have you?" Rodney presses a kiss behind his ear, a brush of teeth behind it. "No, this is for you." Jesus. John knows he's shaking by the way Rodney plasters himself against John's back, arms sliding soothingly around his waist. And John makes himself breathe again when Rodney's hand moves under his shirt. Slow, gentle circles on his belly, soothing, reminding John of hours in their cell after. Well, after. John takes a deep breath and touches his radio with his free hand. "Keep your distance from him," he says, voice already thickening. Rodney's fingertips pressed just beneath the waist of his pants, nails scratching gently. Keying off, he tries another breath. "Can I..." "Jesus, yes." Rodney's fingers press against his on the controls, and John's eyes jerk to the floor when Sumner convulses suddenly, jerking off his knees, mouth a silent O of shock and pain. "You want sound?" "Christ." Rodney moves away eternal seconds, and the sound comes on in a scream that John can feel in his bones. He's suddenly unanchored, adrift in the vision of Sumner writhing on the floor and his screams echoing through John's head. Then Rodney's back, warm and grounding, and John leans back into him gratefully. Pressing, John ups the sensitivity, the scream choking off halfway through as Sumner loses breath, and John can feel Rodney's hands, quick and efficient on his pants, unbuttoning and unzipping so his warm, God, hot, hot hands slide inside. "No underwear," Rodney says thickly, and John half wants to close his eyes to feel Rodney's hand better, but he can't look away from Sumner, writhing on the floor in front of him, mouth drawn up in a tight rictus of pain. "He can change the sensation. I only have one setting for most of the remotes, but yours is special." Teeth close over the side of his throat, and John bucks into Rodney's hand when Sumner lets out a breathless scream. "Yeah, that's it. I told you, we'd get him." Rodney's hand is amazing, slow and deliberately cruel, too tight then too loose, using fingernails on the rough sides of his fingers, pinching the head of his cock to make John bite his lip against a moan. Sumner manages a scream then, and Rodney presses down on John's thumb, upping the level. John licks dry lips as Rodney lets go, raising his arm as Rodney ducks beneath the lean against the glass in front of him, blue eyes half-closed and smoky with arousal. Just over his shoulder, John can see Sumner choking back another scream, and Rodney strokes one hand down the front of his own pants, pausing over his cock, before he goes down on his knees. "Fuck," John whispers. Strong hands cup his hips, thumbs digging into the hollows as soft lips tease the head, tongue wet and soft and amazing. Rodney sucks cock like he's solving an equation, methodical and so certain he's right, and he is. He knows John's body because he learned it, the old parts and the new, scraping with teeth as he goes down, and God, God, Rodney! His free hand he braces on the glass, watching Sumner fall apart in front of him while Rodney's mouth puts John back together, pulling the disparate pieces into a single whole. Yes. When Sumner can scream, John flicks his thumb over the button, and Sumner convulses into a hard arch, back leaving the floor, heat flexing painfully. He's going to hurt when this is over, John thinks breathlessly, Rodney licking him slowly, gently, one hand moving to cup his balls. He's going to hurt. It's like nothing John's ever felt, and he can barely hear Sumner screaming over the hard beat of his heart, watch Sumner writhe and whimper breathlessly, and die a little every second that passes, seconds that have to feel like years. Rodney, he hears himself say, voice hoarse, but Rodney hears him, hand taking the place of his mouth as he pulls back, head tilted up in question. Fuck me. Rodney blinks, mouth opening briefly before he nods, and John shivers as Rodney gives him one more stroke before he gets to his feet. One hand cups around the back of John's head, pulling him into a kiss, gentle and almost sweet, edged with the taste of John on his tongue, teeth pressing quickly into his lip before he withdraws. Blue eyes are blown, pupil leaving a narrow band of electric blue, and John thinks he's never seen anything hotter in his life. "Get on your knees," Rodney says softly, fingers stroking the back of his neck. "And watch Sumner. I'll be right back." John does it, lowering the level a little, giving Sumner a chance to breathe. "You can adapt to anything," John knows, "even pain." He doesn't want Sumner adapting too fast. On the other side of the room, the two men are watching, bored and a little fascinated. John reaches for his radio, considers checking in, then abandoning the thought as Sumner rolls onto his knees. "Regenerated," John thinks with black satisfaction. Both hands braced on the floor, the familiar face comes up, looking toward the observation window. Even from here, John can see him sweating, lines of agony drawn into his face, shuddering with every flare of pain. Just because he can, John lowers it again, then more, watching Sumner try not to relax, and doing it anyway, slumping into the floor in a loose, very unmilitary sprawl. Then Rodney is kneeling behind him, and John comes up on his knees so Rodney can pull down the pants, spreading his legs as much as he can so those clever fingers can trace the line of his ass, sliding beneath the curves to press against him for a breathless second before pushing one finger inside. Regeneration always heals him too tight, and he hasn't had anyone since the last time they took him out of the infirmary. John closes his eyes at the slight burn, feeling Rodney's hand on his shoulder, a warm mouth on the back of his neck, slowly licking up into his hairline. One hand slides around, gently bracing over his stomach, rubbing soothing circles. "This is going to hurt." "I know." John ups the level, just a little, enough to watch Sumner start in shock before dropping it again. Watch him pant into the metal floor, satisfying to see in a simple, predictable way. Rodney is slow, methodical, taking his time to stretch John, two fingers scissoring slowly, and John makes himself relax, trying not to melt into Rodney's mouth when he brushes soft kisses onto his shoulder. He loves Rodney's mouth, loves how he uses it, the contrast between hard fingers and soft lips, the shock of pleasure when Rodney finds his prostate, glittering bright and fading fast. "Come on," he murmurs, when Rodney's mouth brushes his jaw. The fingers twist again, and John shudders at the pressure, glittering arcs of sensation that catch the breath in his lungs as Rodney's knees move between his, a hand on his hip slowly guiding him down. He can feel the head of Rodney's cock press, pausing, soothing hands trailing down his sides, and John opens his eyes on Sumner and presses down the button as he opens himself and takes Rodney's cock. "Jesus," Rodney whispers against his skin, Sumner screaming loud enough for John to feel it in the glass, pressed against his fingertips, and it hurts, but it's Rodney against his back, pressing wet kisses against his neck, murmuring into his ear as John adapts to the burn. Rodney feels huge inside him, filling him up, grounding in this place. Bracing himself against the glass, John pulls up and takes him in again, settling in Rodney's thighs as Rodney gasps into his back. "It's good. Slow like this." Sumner's sounds trailing off to panted, ragged breaths. Wet sounds sound like bubbling blood. And he loves, fucking loves the sounds Rodney makes, gasping into his shirt. Loves the mark Rodney's leaving on his hips, finger-shaped bruises that won't be erased by a regeneration machine. Loves how Sumner shudders and curls onto his side, face wet with tears and snot and sweat when he convulses. John may not remember what happened once a week, every week. They can learn it from Sumner's body, a tendon-snapping stretch that leaves him gasping for air, while Rodney's hand wraps around John's cock, jerking him off with rough, even strokes, palm slick and hard and perfect. "Watch him," Rodney whispers, and pushes John forward to the glass, getting enough leverage to thrust, and John shivers into it, skin alight with pure pleasure. Manjan, Rodney says, biting into his shoulder through his shirt, hand moving faster, molten the heat crawling down John's spine. Fingers threading gently into his hair, pulling his head back just enough for Rodney to get to his neck, tongue drawing patterns that John recognizes from his last regeneration cycle. New skin to replace what had been torn away, muscles ripped from bone, choking, choking. John presses down with his thumb, just as Rodney does something amazing to the tip of his cock, going back down in a hard, fast stroke just tight enough, just wet enough, and he's coming with Sumner screaming silently into the ceiling, Rodney warm and real against his back. And he's shuddering, twisting through it, wanting to keep this feeling forever, feeling Rodney's hand on his hip go rigid, and the spread of heat inside, cock pulsing as Rodney comes with a whispered benediction into John's skin. When John opens his eyes, he can still feel Rodney inside him, trembling with aftershocks of sensation when Rodney runs blunt fingernails up his back beneath his shirt, before withdrawing carefully, pausing for fingers to slide between his thighs, brushing him with another spike of heat. Good, Rodney says breathlessly. No bleeding. John feels Rodney gently ease up his pants, tucking his soft cock away, zipping and buttoning with quick fingers before kneeling up, leaning into John's back, peering at Sumner over John's shoulder. I think he fainted, Rodney says, sounding surprised. John unclenches his thumb from the button and smirks, tilting his head back for a slow kiss, all exploring tongue and warm familiarity. Falling back, John leans his head against Rodney's as he studies the remote. This is pretty fucking cool, he says, tasting blood where he bit his lip. Touching his radio with his free hand, he smiles at Rodney's look of wide-eyed attention. Take him to Carson, get patched up whatever needs fixing. We're gonna have him around for a while. When he meets Rodney's eyes, he sees amused understanding. You wanna do it next time? Rodney kisses him, open-mouthed and thorough. Maybe next time we'll even ask him a question. John gives his briefing rumpled, still glazed from sex and satisfaction, lazily draped across his chair as he draws out statistics gathered from Lorne on death counts and MIA. So comfortable in his skin that Rodney has to lock his fingers around the bottom of his chair to keep from touching. Elizabeth's irritation fades with every word, a slight frown creasing her forehead as she listens, making brief notes into one of the tablets Miko cleared for general use. Is there any sign that they know about Atlantis? If they didn't when they arrived, they probably do by now. It's been at least 2 days since the place was taken, and they definitely took at least 10 people. Slumping even further into his chair, Shepard smiles with lazy malice. Makes you wonder about the legend of the boogeyman, huh? Elizabeth's eyes narrow, but she doesn't comment, turning back to her notes while Carson gives a bored report that's all biology and pointless trivia on aging that Rodney has no interest in hearing. Taylor makes some complaints regarding her people, still on Athos under Lorne's strict supervision, and Rodney makes his report on the effects of the implant, with no clear idea of what he's saying, when John turns half-lidded green eyes on him. Can we start mass-producing it? Elizabeth asks, and Rodney can almost feel her submerged excitement. As soon as I get facilities built, Rodney says, feeling John's booted foot bump into his beneath the table. I'm putting gall on it. It's fairly simple, and upgrades to the programming are integrated automatically. Rodney feels the boot slide up his calf, and loses his train of thought completely as John smiles, slow and dirty. Jerking himself to attention, he finds Elizabeth watching, with a sardonic lift to her brow. When I have enough for an initial test, I'll let you know. I'm looking forward to it, Dr. McKay, Elizabeth says genially, looking back. If that's all, dismissed. We'll meet again in the morning to set up a strategy in case we encounter these wraith, and consider what skills we may need to get from the mainland. Her expression turns thoughtful. If the implant works as Dr. McKay has said, we can easily control a large enough population to make life here much more comfortable. Staff would be useful, John says, stretching, and Rodney watches Elizabeth's eyes focus on John briefly with a look that's unmistakable. Not to mention we need to start looking for supplies. The MREs aren't going to last forever. The implant works, Rodney says shortly, eyes narrowing. But as you know, most of the population still can't access the city since they don't have the ATA gene. Work's going to slow down until Carson catches back up with his research on the ATA. Standing up, he watches John's head tilt back, controlling the urge to wrap a hand in his shirt and pull him to his feet, drag him somewhere unoccupied, and just touch. John is rumpled and liquid and smiling, legs slightly spread. Rodney knows his skin tastes like salt now, and Rodney's cum is still smeared on his inner thighs beneath the straps of his gun. If I could speak to you, Dr. McKay, Elizabeth says from behind them. With a raised eyebrow, John gets to his feet, smirking as he leaves Rodney hard and half-panting. Touching his radio, John glances around the gate room, and one of his men appears at his side like he'd been waiting the entire time for just this reason. Together, they vanish into a transport. Rodney forces himself to look away. I have a list of key personnel that require the implant, so I can start them on duty, Elizabeth says, tapping at her computer. Rodney, with a frown, sits down and opens the list she transferred. The names aren't a surprise. Rodney, scientists from the mainland, Elizabeth's people, which had to say something that she was willing to implant her worshipful followers. Some of the Athosians, including Holling, to keep Taylor in line. Jesus, she's got to be kidding. John? Elizabeth looks up, hands folded beneath her chin. I think he's a risk. Rodney stares at her, appalled. God, I never thought you were stupid before. The dark eyes narrow abruptly. Shepard is unstable and a danger to us all. And to you as well, Dr. McKay. You have to know that. I don't trust you, but I do believe you are aware of the benefits of our continued association. Shepard isn't. John's feral. And Rodney can imagine this in sickening technicolor. The first kick of pain, and they might as well give up hope of living until morning. John Shepard will cease to exist. There's no way to explain what John could be like when Sumner was done with him. No way Elizabeth gets there's a fucking narrow line between John, smart and violent and restless, and the guy who had to be chained down during regeneration sequences because he would kill his doctors while bleeding out on the floor. The only thing that had kept Sumner alive was that he knew that. Jesus, he's the most powerful manifestation of the ATA we have, and we still don't know how the ATA works. If we really wanted to see if he can sink the fucking city on the power of his fucking mind, hey, keep up this train of thought. He pauses, watching her mouth go tight and hard. He's dangerous. We're all dangerous. Rodney clenches both hands beneath the table. You're not touching him, Elizabeth. I even think you're pulling shit like that, I'll let him kill you. Elizabeth's eyes narrow. And what's to stop either of you from turning on me? Oh, she wants leverage. That actually makes more sense. Common sense! Look, you agree to all your people and Taylor's, I'll agree to all of mine and John's. That puts everyone on equal footing. Elizabeth's eyebrows raise in polite disbelief. Will John agree to that? Sometimes Rodney thinks Elizabeth isn't nearly as bright as reputation suggests. Of course. Slamming the laptop closed, he tucks it beneath one arm. I'm starting mass production as soon as I can get Gaul to assemble the equipment. Walking out, he radios Gaul, ordering him into the largest of the cleared labs, before stepping into the transporter, feeling Elizabeth's eyes on him until the door closes. Out of sight, he sags back against the wall. Elizabeth is smart, and she has enough people here. God knows Beckett will do anything he's told if it's said in the right tone of voice. Someone among Elizabeth's people just might be stupid enough to try that shit if she orders it, And they're amazingly fucked if John shuts down again. God, John will try to rip it out with his bare fingers if it happens. And the first time someone tries to activate it? Yeah, no. Rodney shivers and plunges in the lab location, coming out to see more of John's recruits wandering by in the mind-bending uniform of the SGC. They give him short, respectful nods, which he ignores as his due, barging in to find Gaul waiting. Opening his laptop, Rodney uploads the design. Start mass production. Recruit whoever you need. Gaul nods briefly, turning to his laptop, and Rodney watches his face drain slowly of color, eyes almost black, as he recognizes what he's seeing. Gaul, Rodney says, and Gaul turns toward him with slow horror. Rodney likes that look, wonders what Groton will look like when Rodney sends him to get the implant. Think of it as a guarantee. Gaul nods, ashen as he looks back at the screen, licking his lips restlessly. How many units? 175 in the first group, 500 in the second. They're fairly simple. The core program is already uploaded. The basic structure should be easy enough to mass produce. Rodney taps a few keys, then leans one hip against the lab table. Gaul? One shaking hand locks onto the edge of the table. Sir? Keep in mind, I pulled you off the mainland. You're here, and not an after-dinner fuck for some men and women much larger and dumber than you, because I wanted you. That can change at any time. You fuck this up, you warn anyone, I give you to Carson to play with. And he's running out of former guards. I hope we understand each other. Gaul nods quickly, fingers flying over the keyboard as he goes to work, and Rodney is satisfied by the blank terror on his face. Humming, Rodney settles on a stool, pulling up the Atlantis mainframe to check Miko's progress in debugging, and turns his attention to clearing the last of the SGC code. Gaul's motivated, at least. He's already got the protocols in place, and two engineers are adapting equipment to start manufacturing the implant, with no clear idea what they're making. Rodney sends him to bed when it's clear he is beyond exhausted, one of John's men following him at a discreet distance. Rodney wonders idly if Gaul even notices. John's nowhere to be found. Not the mess hall, currently a mess of half-open containers and slowly spoiling food from people too stupid to put up what they don't eat. Not in the practice room, though a few limping people give Rodney the impression John's been around recently. Not in their quarters, though there's still water clinging to the shower. Rodney reaches for his radio, annoyed, then stops himself, leaving his laptop on the neatly made bed. And that's John, who is the cleanest person Rodney has ever met. Rodney wanders down to their old cells, unsurprised to see John cross-legged in front of Ford's, an emptied tray in front of him. Rodney watches John holding a water bottle through the bars with an expression that Rodney can only describe as fond. Rodney, John says, not looking at him. Done? Rodney hesitates, then nods, crossing the room to see Ford, both hands wrapped around the bars, watching John with wide, glazed eyes. Besides food, there's a used hypodermic needle and laboratory-class heroin on the tray. You want to get something to eat? And how long have you been down here? A while, John says vaguely, waving a hand, but he takes back the bottle, setting it on the tray. Get some sleep, Ford. Ford pushes himself into the bars, looking desperate, and prison is apparently not agreeing with him at all. The dark skin's ashen, black circles beneath his eyes. Shepard. Ford. John stands up lazily, tray in hand, one eyebrow raised. Ford deflates, fingers tightening on the bars. I'll be back tomorrow. Yes, sir, Ford whispers, staring up at Shepard with an expression of desperate hope. John smiles, quick and bright, then turns away, shoulder bumping Rodney's as they go out. With a brush of fingers, John lets the lights drop, stepping out of the hall and closing the door behind them. "So, Ford?" John shrugs, handing the tray to one of the men stationed outside. "He's malleable. Seriously, whoever did his psych eval should get another job." Shaking his head, he bumps Rodney's shoulders with his. "He looked tired." "It's been a long day." Rodney hesitates, thinking of the conversation with Elizabeth. John doesn't need to know. On the other hand, "You should keep someone from security with you," he says, as they walk toward one of the transporters. John's raised eyebrow is answer enough. "I'm aware you can take care of yourself," Rodney snaps, pausing as John touches the controls and going inside. "But if something goes wrong, and really, how many of these people can we really trust?" "None of them," John says philosophically, leaning into the wall as Rodney programs in their destination. When Rodney looks up, the green eyes are focused on him with startling clarity, and Rodney has uncomfortable flashbacks to watching John with Elizabeth. "What's making you suddenly worried about my safety?" Rodney crosses his arms. The ground under his feet seems suddenly unstable. John slumps suddenly, looking harmless and relaxed. Which is how John always looks, as good as a warning, teeth bared and ready for an unprotected throat. John works on pack theory, and Rodney's his pack. Rodney gets that. Making himself stay still, he meets the flat green eyes with careful detachment, hoping to God he doesn't look as sick as he feels. "You want to know about what happened with Elizabeth?" "I'm more interested in her list." And that is what Rodney was trying to get across to Elizabeth. This is the only ATA gene they've ever seen that manifests this strong. If John asks the mainframe, it'll damn well show him what he wants to see, or what someone told him to look for. And Rodney suddenly wants to know who the fuck told John, "If you really thought I'd fuck you over, you would have killed me already. So cut the shit and just ask." John pauses briefly. A second of flickering thought. A moment to decide 6 months against whatever the hell he saw. Rodney wonders, suddenly and sickly, if that entire scene in the conference room was staged just for this moment. Elizabeth has that kind of mind. Then he nods slowly. Rodney can almost feel the tension melt away. Breathing out, Rodney crosses the transporter, leaning into the wall beside John, close enough for a casual brush of shoulders, a less casual thumb brushing John's wrist. John's mouth curls up in a tiny grin, but Rodney can feel his pulse slow into calm. "What deal did you make?" "Everyone but us. You, me, Elizabeth, and Taylor." Though right now, Rodney would give a lot to get Elizabeth down to Carson. There's just no way they can pull it off and not have a fucking holy war in the middle of Atlantis. "And that includes Lorne," Rodney adds, not even trying to hide his pleasure. "We'll do everyone on Atlantis first, then sift through the mainland to see if there's anyone there we need." "All of them," Shepard says suddenly. But before Rodney can ask, the door opens. John goes out, lazy and loose-limbed, but still on edge. Though Rodney suspects that whoever told John to go looking for that list is the one who is currently the focus of that simmering anger. Jogging a little, Rodney catches up, noticing that they're heading toward the mess hall. "Okay, Giv, what the hell made you think I'd want you implanted? From a practical perspective, you control the people who make sure my people don't try to kill me in my sleep. I'd rather have nothing that impairs your efficiency in your reign of terror, thanks." John smirks, throwing him an affectionate look before draping an arm across his shoulders. "I didn't." "So, that little moment in the transporter?" "I wanted to know." With his other hand, John draws his gun, checking it briefly before the mess hall doors open. John stops him 2 feet in with a gentle touch. "I'll just ask next time." "Hey," John says, glancing across the mess hall, and Rodney watches the gun come up and take a shot before whoever the hell John is talking to has a chance to respond. Instantly, they're scrambling from the table, quickly hushed screams to keep from drawing attention, and Rodney takes a step back and flips open the panel with a manual lock, flicking it before leaning into the wall. John doesn't rush his stride. There's only one voice screaming, one person on the floor, clutching helplessly at his knee, surrounded by spilled mashed potatoes and a handful of lead sleeves. John casually kicks a chair out of his way, nudging the table aside with one hip before lowering one boot onto the man's chest, flattening him on the floor. "You know," John says thoughtfully, flicking the safety with a thumb as he shifts his foot, boot pressing on an unprotected throat. "I hate being manipulated, and working with Elizabeth was just stupid." The guy. Rodney vaguely remembers him being from one of the other cell blocks, dressed in the gray uniforms of all Shepherd's people had adopted. Whimpers breathlessly, and Rodney watches John put more pressure. Even from the other side of the room, Rodney can see the panic, one hand reaching up to clutch helplessly at Shepherd's boot. He says something Rodney can't quite hear, but Shepherd cocks his head, nodding pleasantly. Then he shifts his weight abruptly, and Rodney can almost hear the crunch of the man's throat beneath the heel of John's boot. Blood bubbles up around the man's mouth, eyes huge and dark and terrified as he struggles for air. "I'm glad you realized that. But this lesson wasn't for you." John pauses, leaning back on one hip. Both the man's hands clutch at his ruined throat, and Rodney can almost hear him thinking of the regenerator only a transporter away. Even now, he could probably be fixed. Hell, he could die and still be fixed. John just watches, head cocked, kicking one reaching hand aside as the man rolls over onto his side, struggling for each breath with sickening sounds like tearing a wet paper bag. After a few more seconds, John turns away, stepping over one reaching hand. "Leave him there," John says to the assembled crowd, who maybe didn't quite get that John didn't earn his reputation by being a truly vicious chess player. Holstering his gun, John smiles at them. "Move." They scatter, some glancing toward the main door and Rodney, others shifting warily toward the balcony. "To jump off," Rodney supposes maliciously, thinking that hitting the water from this height will be like hitting solid concrete. While John wanders through the kitchen, filling a tray with whatever's at hand. "Coffee," Rodney calls as John pauses by the carafes, and John grabs one and the sugar, coming back toward the door as Rodney unlocks it, and takes the carafe and cups before the tray tips over. Glancing back, Rodney lets himself enjoy the terrified silence, then at John's nudge, follows him out into the hall. "Feel better?" Rodney asks, reaching for an apple teetering on the edge of the bowl and taking a bite. John grins. "Yeah." Rodney does a brief check-in with the gate room, but it's apparently closing on evening, which reminds Rodney that they need some kind of shift assignments put into place, and reminds himself to get a copy of how John set up the shifts for security. Miku gives distracted answers on how far she's progressed decrypting the last data burst. Rodney finds it worrying how many times she uses the word sir without direct threats. Mostly, though, he just wants to get John somewhere to rest. Rodney knows the signs of exhaustion, and that little scene in the mess hall, though fun, was as good as a warning. It's weirdly domestic, watching John remove his boots for cleaning, careful not to get any blood on the floor on his way to the bathroom, while Rodney hunts for the flatware he'd brought in a day ago. Eating while Rodney instructs John on the tablet Rodney liberated from Miko for John's use. Powering up his own laptop while John spreads out a drop cloth on the bed and starts to disassemble and clean his guns. John takes reports from Lauren, still in Athos with Taylor and Holling, as they hunt down both her people and the Athosian collaborators. From Bates on Elizabeth and her followers, meditating in one of the larger lounging areas. Check-ins from every person assigned to watch a scientist. And Cadman, reporting on Carson's stability as she gently shifts him back to ATA gene therapy studies. After checking the progress of the scientist Gall had designated to continue work on implant production, Rodney does a brief check of diagnostics on the tragically draining ZPM, before finally leaning into the wall to watch John. John, who is humming tunelessly, looks peaceful as he reassembles a 9mm and sights it before setting it aside. You said all of them. John looks up, Zen moment broken. What? The mainland, when I said... Supplies, John says, stroking gentle fingers over a knife as sharp as a straight razor. As in, we are no longer supplied from Earth? Rodney pauses. Oh. It's land, their people, and they have no other use. John shrugs as he sets the knife aside. And how many are farmers? They'll learn or they'll starve. Kayla wants to bring some of her less obedient people back. At least the ones she doesn't kill on sight. John looks thoughtful. Elizabeth wants to start contact with some of the worlds the SGC has exploited already. With any kind of luck, their bitterness will be strong enough not to question too closely how Atlantis came under new management. More likely, they won't care all that much. John sighs and starts to put everything away, folding up the drop cloth and sliding it under the bed. Rodney wonders if he is doomed to a lifetime of smelling gun oil and getting hard. But even assuming we can set up some kind of trade, I'd prefer having a regular supply line on the planet. Rodney must have been showing his surprise, because John grins at him. You'd be surprised what they teach you when they're grooming you for command. Rodney smirks, fighting the urge to kiss a smile off his face. Right. John smirks, pulling up on his knees, narrow socked feet pressing into the bed cover. The short hair is still unfamiliar. Crawling onto the bed, Rodney knees his way between John's thighs, reaching out to run gentle fingers through the fine, spiky strands. John's eyes shut lazily, leaning into each touch, making a low, appreciative noise that could be a purr deep in his throat. I liked it longer, Rodney says wistfully, tipping John sideways on the bed, better to stretch him out and look at him, long and lean and perfect. John makes a vaguely affirmative sound, shifting onto his back so Rodney can arrange him as he likes, one arm curled beneath his head, legs slightly spread, lazy and sleepy and content. Let it grow out. John's eye is half open, giving Rodney an amused look before they flicker closed again, body going boneless. Reaching for his laptop, Rodney moves up the bed, opening up the latest of Miko's decrypted data bursts, petting John as he reads, soft hair, silky skin, the stubbled line of his jaw. He never gets tired of touching John, feeling John uncoil beneath his hands. Daedalus, Rodney says thoughtfully. John shifts beneath his fingers. Were they coming back? Irregular supply runs, John answers huskily. Raising himself on one elbow, John leans across Rodney's lap, peering into the screen. You know, they were supposed to come get the Athosians when they decided against gate travel to save ZPM power. That was at least 2 regular runs ago. They might be due back. John yawns, shifting back to the bed, but he doesn't look as relaxed anymore. New prisoners, too. Rodney rubs soothing circles into John's neck. Sumner talked a lot? He left his laptop open a lot. John's mouth is tight. But this was in one of the data bursts. If the data list left, that means they'll be out of communication range of Earth by the time the SGC checks in with us, just in case that goes wrong. Rodney thinks, a little nauseated, of the data list. Weapons, cloaking technology, shields, a hyperdrive. While they have a mostly depleted ZPM. But for some reason, John's expressions soften, go dreamy. What are you thinking? John shrugs, eyes glittering. I've always wanted my own hyperdrive ship. Rodney stares at him. You want to take the Daedalus? Of course he does. John commits Grand Theft Spaceship with Asgard cruisers, so why the hell not? Never mind, stupid question. Have any idea how we'll get it? John smiles tranquilly. Love you. Reaching up, he tangles his fingers with Rodney's. You know Elizabeth's going to approach me next. Rodney remembers the way Elizabeth watched John at the briefing, feeling himself tense, fingers tightening around John's. There was more than one reason she'd want John to have the implant, and not just to keep him under control. All on its own, his mind jumps, imagining Elizabeth straddling John's lap in the conference room, hands buried in his short hair, touching him, holding the tiny remote and using it while she fucks him. The nausea is so strong he thinks he might be sick. Yeah. Breathe out. Think logically. If you killed her, she has too many people here. I'd have to kill every one of them, and they could do some serious damage before we got rid of them all. Pausing, John waits, coiled energy at rest, and Rodney can guess what she'll ask. He just doesn't think he can deal with it. Rodney, if she... Rodney, if she... Rodney licks his lips, and he can actually feel the request sticking to the tip of his tongue. Send John out to kill her now, and maybe they could get rid of most of her followers, but maybe they won't. Bates reports her with the scientists, with security, with Taylor. If she asks, that's the question. Looking down at John, face smoothed over in calm acceptance, Rodney's throat goes tight. John will do it if he asks, even if it's a crappy idea. Pushing the laptop onto the bed, he twists around, cupping John's face in his hands. No. He doesn't know how to share. He's never learned. He doesn't want to. He'll kill her himself first, and he knows that John's right. If they wanted Elizabeth gone without complications, it's far too late for that. Taylor and the Athosians, Elizabeth's followers, whoever else she's got. Do you want to? He can't even make himself say it. With her? John snorts softly, leaning in for a brief, warm kiss, and Rodney licks desperately into his mouth, feeling the tension drain away with every possessive touch Rodney leaves on his skin. I'd rather watch her die. John rolls him over, stretching out on top of Rodney like a cushion, settling them together like pieces clicking into place. Rodney wraps his arms around John's back tightly, accepting the slow kiss with fingernails digging into John's back, marking wherever he touches. Then we better be able to deal with what she'll do with that answer. After a while, Rodney can breathe again, exhaustion pulling him under. Pushing John gently over, he gets the covers pulled out, watching as John sleepily struggles out of his pants and shirt, curling up with a heartfelt sigh of satisfaction against Rodney's shoulder, before drifting off, gun shoved beneath the pillow, one leg slung over Rodney's thigh, fingers twined in the waist of Rodney's boxers, like he thinks Rodney might get away if he sleeps. He doesn't want to give her John, not for a second. See John learn to relax into someone else's touch, go pleasure soft and boneless, twined with Elizabeth in her bed, sitting in the conference room close enough to touch. He can't do that. He can take care of this himself, he thinks, closing his eyes at the feel of soft hair against his chin, matching to John's slow, deep breaths. He just needs to think.